could the 2025 Guardians look like the 2024 Tigers? Ain't dead yet. Have the 30th ranked strength of schedule. That's last in the league, meaning that there's a lot of winnable games in the second half after the All-Star break. Home Run Derby tonight. We'll talk more about that coming up a little bit later on. Can you blame Andrew Berry? Can you hold him accountable for this with Quinshon Judkins?
I say no, not in the sense that I've seen people doing it. Like, to do the math that I think Mitch was doing earlier in the show, which is, and I've seen the memes and I've seen all the accounts saying that 2 second-round picks in 2 years. This one has nothing to do. This one is totally different than the Mike Hall situation. And I say that because Mike Hall, according to Albert Breer and some other NFL reporters, there were warning signs. Not the case with this.
You have said, you have asked the question before, can we take risks as a franchise? We are in a position where we can't take risks on guys. I didn't think he was a risk. Quinshon Judkins was not a risk.
This seemingly wasn't. Now look, any player you take, like, okay, Justin Tucker.
It's any job.
You know, that's we can't account for every single one of these players and who makes the decisions they make once. You know, once they're in the league or once they have money, of course, again, that doesn't really apply here.
That depends. I mean, if the Ravens know, then what are they? Well, I mean, really, what are they supposed to do? If the Ravens knew, then there might be some sort of a protocol that you find out about the allegations. I don't know what he did or didn't do, but if the Ravens know about it, I don't know if there's a responsibility that the Ravens have to alert somebody. Of course,
yeah, but we're talking about drafting guys. Yeah. And whether or not they have character concerns.
I mean, once
like the Eagles can get away with it, right? Like they took somebody fell to them because of character concerns.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so we always, I think we always know that the more talented you are, you know, teams are going to be willing to put up with more. I do wonder, like, overall, and this is not, again, a Judkins question because we didn't know this. Nobody knew this. There was no reason to think there were warning signs here. And we don't even know if he did anything wrong yet. Like, let's be honest. We have to wait for this to play out. I want to be fair to him and the accuser. Like, let's wait for this to come out. They obviously knew each other. They obviously had a relationship. So, you know, those things can get very murky. I do wonder if we are past the point. Like, do fans in general care? Do they even care anymore? Whether or not players have, you know, prospects come out of college and have any kind of black marks on them.
I think they do. I think
they
do.
Yeah, if they're good, like I've heard people say,
it's not about,
and this isn't even a prospect, like Deshaun Watson, you know, it's easy now because he looked like one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. But if he were getting the Browns to the AFC Championship game, would anybody care
about
the accusations beforehand?
They care about availability. I don't think it's a moral issue. I think for some, but for the vast majority, it's not a moral issue. It's up to the NFL to do whatever they want to do when it comes to morals. But I think when it comes to availability, that's what they care about. So if, like, you knew there were a bunch of red flags on a player and you still took that player high and then that player was all of a sudden going to give you a lot of problems, well, if you're an organization like the Philadelphia Eagles, you can get by with that. If you're an organization like the Browns where everything's under the spotlight, then you're going to be in a lot of trouble for that. Because I wouldn't hold Andrew Berry accountable for this specific situation. I won't hold Andrew Berry accountable for this specific situation. But it gets lopped onto everything else that's happened over the last 6 years. Like, Twitter reactions brought to you by Shivan Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store, and then I'm going to get to the phones here. Xavier P. on Twitter, of course you can blame Berry. We blame him for everything bad. Anything good is ignored. It's like blaming him for Shador speeding twice. Well, in the end of it, he gets the blame for this because he's the general manager. The other part of it is, how many things can I really count on that he's done great? What can I count on that he's done exceedingly well so far?
JOK.
JOK, which was unfortunate for him, but JOK was a good one.
JOK was a really good draft pick.
DeJuan Jones in the fourth round, but I got to take away a little bit of credit because you drafted Jedrick Wills in number 10 overall. And who's DeJuan Jones replacing? So, yeah, you got a fourth round guy there. He's replacing a guy that you drafted in the first round.
And look, Martin Emerson looked like that was going to be a great draft pick, and then he had a really, really rough, you know,
jury still out? Okay, yeah. So I got one guy where it's unfortunate, but give him credit for it. I mean, JOK. I got a jury still out guy, and I got a guy that, yeah, I would give you credit for, except he's replacing a guy you drafted in the first round. So there's only a couple of things I can be rosy on. And while it's not fair, and I will probably correct some callers on a Browns Monday after a loss this year when they start to rifle off all the bad things that have happened under Andrew Berry and they get to the Quinshon Judkins thing, I'm sure you and Lima will go, you and myself and you, Lima, will go, well, you know, I mean, there was no red flags about that before. But we'll also say, but I get what you're saying. There's a lot of things to go against him. Because there are. There are. So it's not fair to put it on him. Unless we find out later on in this, maybe we find out by tomorrow morning, oh yeah, there was all sorts of red flags on Quinshon Judkins. But I didn't believe there were. And I don't think anybody else does as of right now. So if there were no red flags on it, okay, well, an adult's an adult, and he's got to stand for his own decisions. He got to answer for him as well. And so Quinshon Judkins will have to answer for him. It sucks because as fans, you will also have to answer for him, regardless of what happens in the court of law. Because I think that once these things happen, you don't put yourself in a good situation. He'll probably be punished by the league just for not being in a good situation. 216-474-0092. And because it's going to be a run-heavy offense, whether it be the 40-year-old veteran, the guy who's off the scrap heap, or the two rookies, it really affects what you're trying to do offensively. This is terrible for the Browns. Terrible.
We were sitting in our living room.
216-474-0092. E in Cleveland. You're first up on the fan. Hello. E. E.
Hello.
Hi, go.
I'm sorry, it's Steve. I'm sorry, guys.
Nicely produced. Go ahead there, Steve.
Listen, Andrew Berry is responsible for everything that happens in that building. Good, bad, or ugly, you get paid to do that. And it's their own fault because of their track record. Their track record was Watson, Hunt, Hall, and now Jenkins. Yeah, Jenkins may be one of those odd things out that you couldn't
Judkins,
see.
Judkins.
What did
what?
Jenkins do?
Judkins. And when it, well, wait a minute. Hold on now. For Andrew Berry, okay, he answers to it because the guy was a bad player, but as far as I know, since Deshaun Watson has been here in Cleveland, there hasn't been anything off the field.
Yeah, but the thing is they try to outsmart everybody in the league, and they take these big swings and things, and guess what? When it doesn't work, then unfortunately you're held accountable. I'm in management, and if I made some of the decisions that affected my company, I would get released. So that's what you get paid for.
I mean, ultimately, Steve, while I don't want to agree with you, I have to, and thank you very much for the call. Again, this stacks up against him at the end of the year. Fair or not, it stacks up against him at the end of the year.
Well, yeah, if this thing snowballed and, you know, it turns out the NFL takes this very seriously and it ends up going bad for him and he gets suspended for like half the year, you know, yeah, of course we'll say, yeah, another Andrew Berry draft pick, but it's not that Andrew Berry like didn't do the work on Judkins. Like sometimes players, you know, have things happen in their lives or they're responsible for things that happen in their lives.
I think though it's gonna be
if there were no warning signs though, I'm not gonna blame him for taking a guy that he should have seen coming. He should have seen something off the field. Because, you know, we ask every time we draft players, especially high, you know, we ask what are the pros and cons of these players? And like the difference between Mike Hall, there was some stuff in his background. We didn't necessarily know about it, but there were some NFL reporters who knew some things. And then, okay, then you could say make cost benefit analysis on that. In this case, that wasn't any part of the track record of Judkins.
So I think that in the grand scheme of it, when this is all done, while I don't want to hold it against him, it gets held against him. Whether it's fair or not, and it's not fair. And so for them, what makes this even more difficult, he ain't signed yet. And it might, if I'm thinking about this now, which I am obviously, then does this make it more likely, like if I'm Quinshon Judkins, it's like, you know what, I don't know what's going to happen here. He seems like he has a good lawyer, the guy with what he said. I mean, there is some plausible doubt. As of right now, just from what we heard, there's some doubt there, but you'll have to hear the prosecution at some point on this, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's a domestic case. There's always going to be two sides to the story.
Ask, is he allowed to leave the state? Is he allowed to leave the state while this bond is going on?
No, to Florida?
I think we're
going to
find that out today. I think
it's a misdemeanor, right?
Yeah, because if he's allowed to leave the state, if I'm Quinshon Judkins, I'm like, I don't know what I know they're holding out, all holding out for guaranteed money. It's like sign the contract and get to work. Get in the building, get to work, and try to move on with this. Wouldn't that be the case?
Yeah, and like in the Mike Hall situation, there was a gun involved. That's not the case here. So Correct. Maybe that's the difference between whether he gets put on an exempt list Like, remember that?
Mike Hall also pled no contest.
Yep.
Because if I'm him, it's sign the contract, get into the building, because he should be. Mike Hall's incident happened in the state of Ohio. I don't think there was any sort of problems with him traveling for a road game in a game that he was, like a preseason game that he was participating in, or a joint practice on the road, they had it at home last year, their joint practice. Now they're having two on the road. Is he allowed to go with his team? Like that all has to get settled here eventually. Because to me, it's like, okay, get in, sign your contract, get to work, and then we'll see where this goes. Because you still need to be a part of this. Whatever they're doing, you still need to be a part of this organization. And then move on from there. If you end up getting suspended for, how many games was it for Mike Hall? Was it five games? If you end up getting suspended for five games, then damn it, that's how it goes, and we'll all deal with it. And you are held accountable for it. You'll lose money because of that. But if you end up getting suspended, fine, but you need to get him in the, he needs to get in the building. He needs to start working. He needs to get his face in front of everybody and try to do his best to, because I don't know what's happened, and it's innocent until proven guilty, so he needs to get to work while they deal with these allegations and this misdemeanor charge. 216-474-0092. I think that that's going to be in his best interest. If he's not allowed to leave the state of Florida for whatever reason, then I think you got another big problem on that, because it's okay when you can't legally get him into camp. When are you actually going to ever be able to get him in? Because if they could do this, if they do this in 5 weeks, okay, that's right before the season starts, but the NFL is going to have their say, and then he's still going to be behind because he can't be a part of the offense. And for the Browns, am I going to give a fully guaranteed contract to a guy who just got accused of this the other day, no matter what the facts say? Does that go against the Browns? Does that make the Browns look bad if they give the second year or the second round fully guaranteed contract, or they come together on a contract here as these guys start getting signed before camp? So if they're fighting over fully guaranteed contracts and they get them or they don't, whatever, less money but guaranteed, whatever it is, do you look worse doing it? I don't know. Because I can still see where a lot of people go, well, the Browns are giving away fully guaranteed contracts to guys with these allegations. They're simply that. They're allegations. And I still have to field a football team, and I still drafted him to be a part of this team, and he needs to get to work. So this is even muddier than
But you do know a coach is always, regardless of innocence, guilt, whatever, however plays out, you know what a coach always is going to say. He's going to tell the players every time, don't put yourself in positions. They always say it. They always, the minute Kevin Stefanski got
that
text.
But I think that's a lot easier said than done.
Well, sure. But especially with athletes. Athletes who are about to have money. Maybe not have the money yet, but athletes that are going to have money. They tell these guys every single time, be careful who you surround yourself with and don't put yourself in volatile situations. And coaches are not going to sit there and wait to hear testimony. Like he's already annoyed. Kevin Stefanski's already annoyed. Regardless of whether he's totally innocent, and this is the biggest fraud being perpetrated against an athlete in the history of, you just know that Stefanski saw that text that he got and said, "We told you guys, we took," because you know they told the guys.
216-474-0092. Anthony Kastrovitz going to join us here in 5 minutes. Could the 2025 Guardians look like the 2024 Detroit Tigers? That's at 9:21 on the Fan. Let's go to the Fan Hotline, where we have Anthony Kastrovitz from MLB.com as well as MLB Network, where Mitch has written, he's already in Atlanta for All-Star Week. I'm going, yeah, the home run derby's tonight, bud. Anthony Kastrovitz joins us right now. Hello, Anthony.
Oh, I've been down here. I'm basically a lifer when it comes to the 2025 All-Star festivities. So, we're locked and ready for tonight.
Hey, can I ask you a weird question? How's that whole neighborhood around Truist Park and everything? We're trying to do the same thing up here. How's that look?
Yeah. You know, it's like everywhere you go, you see the same thing. I mean, it's great. Don't get me wrong. Like, it's a great pregame atmosphere and everything. But, you know, you got your Yard House. You got your, you know, like the hip place where you go bowling. You know, there's always one of those. You know, there's some shops. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'm the target audience, but it's perfectly fine. It's going to really liven up Brook Park, let me tell you that.
Anthony Kastrovitz joining us. Follow him on Twitter, at Kastrovitz on Twitter. He is on the Fan Hotline. So, Guardians, they finish up the first half of the season strong after a 10-game losing streak, and they were like something like 9-21 over their last 30 before they started winning again. Is this a team that can still make a run towards a wild card, or should they think about liquidating some of these assets for the future?
I mean, maybe both, you know. The Tigers were sellers at last year's deadline, and look what happened to them in the last 2 months. You know, they played their young guys and took off. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen to the Guardians, because the math is definitely against them right now. The schedule's pretty light coming out of the break, so that could work in their favor. But it's just been a frustrating season doesn't begin to cover it, you know. It's kind of been worst-case scenario, and all the things last year we were saying, how are they doing this? Now we're like going the other way. We're like, how has it gotten this bad? So the truth is probably somewhere in the middle between those two teams. But, you know, if they can take advantage of this light schedule prior to the trade deadline, that could impact their decision-making. But if not, you know, they could really be a team that takes advantage of what is clearly a seller's market.
Did you see anything different in this team over the last two series? Obviously, it's the White Sox, and Houston did have some players out, but did in any way, shape, or form, did you say, wow, that's actually a team more capable than I previously thought?
Well, it all just comes down to how much life they show offensively. They put 6 runs on Hunter Brown, who's a Cy Young candidate. You know, that was great to see. They had such a miserable month of June that you forgot what it looks like when they score runs, you know? So that came to life again. But at the end of the day, you know, they have so many lineup holes, and they are so dependent on Stephen Kwan and Jose Ramirez. And after that, it's just huge question marks all over the place. And that's why when you think ahead to the second half, I mean, you would hope and think that they free up some opportunities for their younger guys in the system. By that, I mean, of course, Chase DeLauder and maybe CJ Kapus, but, you know, doing that might require doing something with Carlos Santana, you know, making some uncomfortable decisions in the outfield as well. So we'll see, they needed something in that moment. And that Houston series was, you know, good for the soul for sure.
Is Carlos Santana on his way out by the end of the month?
I mean, I don't know what the market would be for him in trade. I just, you know, just logically, I mean, guy's almost 40 years old. He's got a sub 700 OPS, and you know, you got it. If it's a lost season, if it's a season where they're just not going to contend anyway, I mean, you have to take advantage of at bats and opportunities at the major league level. You have to find those for the guys in your system who are knocking on the door. So I don't know what that means for Carlos Santana, if it would be more of a reduced role or if it would be a trade, but I would hope for his sake, you know, if it is going to be going down that road, then I would hope that he gets to go to a place where, you know, his veteran presence is valued and he can help a team down the stretch that's in contention. But, you know, as you said, maybe this team gets back in contention. It's hard to envision him going forward as an everyday player just because of his age and the production offensively.
Anthony Castrovin's joining us right now, getting ready for the All-Star festivities. So we had an All-Star closer a year ago that was the best closer in baseball so far. This year, it obviously has not matched what it was last year, but he still had his moments. They do have him under team control. So how do you see this situation playing out?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely getting, you know, people are showing interest in him, as you would expect. I mean, the bullpen environment in Major League Baseball this year is rough. You know, there's a lot of teams going to be looking for help in that area at the deadline, a lot of very good teams. And, you know, his stuff still plays up. You know, I know the numbers, particularly because of what happened in the first month, you know, the numbers aren't what they were last year, but he's still got elite stuff. And it's interesting because this is the kind of guy the Guardians trade in that, you know, he's getting more expensive for them relative to the rest. I want to say it's like $6 or $7 million next year. And then he's got the options for, I believe, $10 million apiece, you know, the 2 years after that. You know, for the Guardians, that's a significant percentage of your payroll, unfortunately. For bigger market teams, not so much. So this is sometimes a moment where they've thinking like Andrés Giménez, right? Where, you know, where the contract starts to become untenable for them. I'm not saying Class A's is as, you know, with Giménez, it was a very much sub-average bat, you know, started to take up a larger percentage of payroll. Class A is a key guy in this club, but this is often a moment where, as an organization, they explore a guy's trade value. So I wouldn't be shocked if a deal came down. You don't necessarily expect it or predict it, but it wouldn't be shocking, I don't think, for anybody. And there's definitely interest in him out there.
What I'd be really surprised with, Anthony Kastrovitz joining us on the show, I'm reading about Cade Smith and possibilities with a trade with him, and I'm thinking, why? Is that other teams trying to speak this thing maybe into existence or grease the rail or something?
I would think so, because again, that's the guy they build around. You know, they build around the guys who are pre-arbitration, and no, I mean that wouldn't make a tremendous amount of sense to me.
Anthony Castrovitz with us on the show. So for Stephen Vogt, I mean, this has been his first real tough stretch. I know he had lost seven in a row last year, but that was a real tough stretch of a month. We're again 9-21, I think, over their 30 up until Monday when they started win. Last Monday when they started winning again. For him, what do you think were the challenges for him of leading this team where they've taken away payroll from an ALCS team? They're still kind of handcuffed by what their payroll is, and you know, a lot of people are beating down the door for some of these pups to come up from Columbus.
Yeah, I mean, this is the reality of the job that he didn't have to face last year. To his credit, you know, I mean, that team exceeded expectations from day one. And you mentioned, as you said, there was one long losing streak, but there was always a sense last year that, man, they are getting the absolute most out of his roster. He's crushing it with the bullpen moves. You know, it was fun to watch. This year has not been as fun to watch. So this is where, you know, the other side of the coin, and he gets tested for the first time as a manager to go through moments like this. And you've seen tremendous consistency from him in terms of how he relates to players, how he relates to the media, et cetera. Sometimes you want to bang your head against the wall as a media member, because he keeps repeating, like, you know, this is not who we are. And he can only say that so many times before it's like, well, maybe this is who you are. But, no, I mean, this is why he got the job, is just that demeanor, you know, that steadiness, the ability to work well with the front office, all those things have all, you know, been steady throughout a very rocky first half of 2025.
Jacob Mizorowski ends up making the All-Star team late. He was just appointed in only 25 innings. I know that there's some old-time baseball fans who are very upset by that. I think in any sport there would be some older fans who are upset by that. Do you think it's a good thing, or do you question this move here with him being on the All-Star team?
I think it's a great thing. I haven't advocated for a while, and this is maybe not the way to do it, but, you know, this should be a spectacle, and maybe each roster just needs a spot for a guy who's just maybe a young guy or whatever, just somebody who's just flat out, like, has the attention of fans, as this kid, the Miz, does right now. And he just ran into a situation where, I mean, you need people to pitch in the game. I know that when he was named, people were throwing out, you know, other guys who had better, you know, more of a track record this season and all that. But at the end of the day, like, people are going to be more excited to see this kid than they are, you know, Christopher Sanchez or Ranger Suarez, you know. And there was an attempt by the league to offer a spot to those guys, but various people kind of turned it down because they're pitching over the weekend leading up to it, and they didn't want to pitch in an All-Star game. And the whole point of being a replacement is you're available to pitch in the game or play in the game. You know, that's the whole point. That's why we replaced the originally named All-Stars, is to have people who can, you know, take those innings or at bats. So the Miz was willing to do that, and lo and behold, here we are. So I think this is a easier sell for the All-Star game. Hey, look at this kid, man. He's only made 5 starts in the big leagues, but he's electric. He's getting the attention of all of his peers. He's a great story. So let's showcase that.
Robot umps, your thoughts?
Yeah, and it's a misnomer, because what you're going to see at the All-Star game tomorrow night, and in all likelihood next season, is not quote-unquote robot umps, because it's still, the umpire is still calling every ball and strike in every game. It's just that it's the challenge system where you have, you know, for the game tomorrow night, and I would assume this would appear to be where they're leaning going forward, is you have 2 challenges per team. Only the pitcher, the hitter, or the catcher can ask for a challenge, and it's all very fast. It's like the Hawkeye thing in tennis, you know, is the ball in or out? It works very quickly. It adds kind of a fun strategic angle to the game of, you know, saving your challenges versus using your challenges. And, you know, I've seen it many times now in minor league baseball, and they've used it in some, you know, futures game and spring training this year. And it's so streamlined that you could very easily miss it even happening. And so it's just about getting, like, the biggest calls, making sure the biggest calls are right, should there be any controversy, you know, on the part of the players. So it's a net positive. And yeah, so robot umps are tremendously unpopular within baseball, because they did experiment with that, with full robot umps, and the umpire just back there, you know, with the quote unquote robot call in his earpiece. And yeah, this slows the game down. There's more walks. People hated it. and it didn't really have the traditional way games are called.
Well, why did it? What do you mean by it slowed the game down? Is it because it had a very rigid?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Well, can't they just change that?
Well, they can, yeah, but, you know, there's just kind of that art to umpiring, right, where it's a 10-1 game, and they kind of move the game along, you know. Mm-hmm. Veteran guys kind of hitting his spots, you might give him a little bit off the black. Now, that's changed a little bit, too, just because the way umpires are graded, but it's still in there. I mean, there's still a human element to umpiring, and it's people that it's things that people within the game accept. And, yeah, like I said, I mean, they did it for a while. They tried full robot umps for quite a while, It didn't pass the smell test. So the challenge system has been very popular, and, you know, it worked well in spring training. Doesn't add much time to the game. It's on average 4 pitches a game, you know, that are impacted by it. And they are conceivably the biggest pitches. And also it actually gives you a pretty good appreciation for the umpires doing a pretty good job, because those 4 pitches a night that were the quote unquote maybe most controversial pitches, they were still getting them right about half the time. You know, the challenge was not upheld. So I love it, man. I think it's kind of fun. I love the strategic angle of it, and I think fans are going to like it too.
Can I put you in a bad spot?
Sure.
What can you tell us?
I love being in a bad spot.
What can you tell us about Laviolette, if anything?
Just that he goes against the grain of what they've targeted. Generally speaking, in recent drafts, you know, for one, he's 6'6". Uh-huh. They've been known to take a lot of little guys. And, you know, he's got big power and also big risk, you know, big swing and miss. He did have the hand injury and surgery at the end of the year, but that doesn't seem to be a big concern. But the swing and miss is the bigger concern. And it's nice to see them kind of go a different direction. Obviously, their position player development has been very, you know, inconsistent and maybe too consistent in some ways, where, I mean, you hit on a Stephen Kwan. I mean, that's a great, you know, that's great. But they've tried to go that mold in general with smaller undervalued guys or bat to ball skills. And the game is trending that way, so it makes sense. But you got to have some pop. You got to have guys who can hit the ball over the fence. And they drafted a few last night. So that is clearly a strategy of theirs for this particular draft, where they had a quantity in picks. But, you know, their first pick was at number 27 overall as a result of their success last season. And so you could see them taking some calculated gambles with those picks and going for some pop.
You're saying the league is trending back towards complete hitters, not just boppers?
Absolutely. I mean, we're going to have more hits. Right now we have more hits than strikeouts for the first time since 2017. Yeah, this is what Major League Baseball engineered. And I would say it's the right thing to engineer. I mean, you can compare this year's numbers in terms of time of game, you know, hits per game, runs per game, et cetera. It's 1985. It mirrors 1985. So, that is just a brand of baseball that's just more fun to watch. We still have the home run hitters. We still have, I mean, we have a catcher with 38 home runs at the break, you know, there's still a lot of that going on, but you have to have athleticism in your lineup, some speed in your lineup, and bat to ball skills to take full advantage of this environment with the rules.
Find him on Twitter at Castro Vince. Anthony, thank you very much for the time. All the best. Enjoy this evening and the week.
Thanks, guys. Good to hear from you.
Anthony Castro Vince on the Fan Hotline. All right. One question about that when we come back with the, you want full robot umps? You're not going to get full robot umps. Jacob Mizorowski, is that a problem that he's going to the All-Star game? 25 innings pitched.
Well, I think Anthony kind of explained
it. 5 starts, I think. Oh, so you don't have an opinion on it yourself? You'll just let Anthony Kastermans have your opinion.
It does seem ridiculous. But they really couldn't find anybody to pitch?
Well, a lot of guys are bowing out. I mean, Jose Ramirez bowed out to take care of his aches and pains to get ready for the second half. No, I don't think he would have wanted to. So a lot of guys are bowing out of the All-Star game to get ready for the second half of the season. You have to have somebody go. And it's like, well, okay, well, if you guys are all going to bow out of the All-Star game, damn it, we're going to put somebody out there. This is why I agree with Major League Baseball on it, is you got to put somebody out there that's going to draw some people to watch, because this guy's a big story in baseball terms. It's not Paul Skeens last year, but he is a big story. And it's like, okay, let's see what this kid has. But now people are going to watch.
They've got to start developing this new crop of pitchers,
yes,
right?
Because yes.
The ones, the Kershaws and the Verlanders, those days are gone, right? So I mean, now it's Tarek Skubal and Paul Skeens and
it's very you find yes, guys like that. It's very, 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 very easy to act outraged over all this. Okay, we'll get their asses out there, and then I won't put the rookie out there. But if you're gonna put me in a position to put the rookie out there who has been scintillating to start his career, then I'm gonna put him out there because this is supposed to be a television event that everybody watches.
Philly shortstop Trey Turner said, "What a joke! That's blanking terrible. I mean, that's terrible."
Then go
dude.
Make your other vets do it.
Outfielder Nick Castellanos said, "It's turning into the Savannah Bananas."
Then go get your other vets tell them to go play in the game.
I think Savannah Bananas could probably get a better rating than what they get from the 739.
I don't know how good a television ratings they get. I know they sell out every single.
They got TV contracts now.
I know, they did get a TV contract.
From nothing 3-4 years ago to TV contracts.
That guy who runs that thing, I don't know who the hell he is. I don't even know his name.
He's got a yellow suit.
He just runs around in a yellow suit. I mean, he does it from what I've read, this guy's doing it right. That guy sits there like Richard Petty and takes pictures with everybody until everybody has left the stadium. I mean, you have 80,000 people in Death Valley watching Savannah Bananas baseball. You got him running up and down the steps. He's making a killing, I'm sure, but he's running up and down the steps in that yellow suit and hot ass weather. I don't care. It's always hot in South Carolina, and he's taking pictures with everybody. He's earning his millions. I don't know what he's making, but he's earning it. Good on him as a I don't think that something like this is going to last forever, so you might as well make as much as you can just in case it doesn't.
Savannah Banana Ball from Fenway on ESPN Top's original cable primetime telecast among adults 18-49. I guess it got it did okay. It got 850.
I can't guarantee it. I will bet you though that the kids. I was in a playoff tournament this weekend, right, with 11-year-olds. I will bet you those kids know more about Savannah Bananas than they know about the whole of the major leagues
yes.
right now.
Yes,
we had a dad from the other team catch a foul ball. And they all cheered like it was an out, like it is in Banana Ball. It's not Banana Ball, guys. We still play regular baseball.
It is. I will tell you this. It is like, you know, you had your daughters where it's like, okay, even if you can't go to Taylor Swift, you have to get merch.
Yeah.
Like, that's the big thing. Like, you go to the baseball, Chris, and if you have.
Right now, we really don't have many younger brothers on that 11U team. We have one family that has two younger brothers. They wear Savannah Bananas hats to every time I see them, they're wearing Savannah Bananas stuff. And I know they own more than one shirt and one hat.
ESPN came out with their top 10 for the quarterbacks with the this is from the executives and the coaches. This is not an ESPN thing. The executives, coaches, and scouts ranked the NFL's top 10 QBs for 2025. Are you ready? Number one, Mahomes. Number two, Josh Allen. Number three, Joe Burrow. Number four, Lamar Jackson. Number five, Jaden Daniels. Already number five.
Whoa.
Number six, Matthew Stafford. Number seven, Justin Herbert. Number eight, Jared Goff. Number nine, Jalen Hurts. And clocking in at number 10. For the first time in years, I think, in the top 10, Baker Mayfield.
Hey, Bake Show.
The article says
he played here, didn't he?
Yeah, he was here for a few years.
The article says Baker Mayfield walked so Sam Darnold could run. Former number one pick is emblematic of the NFL's capacity for career resurgences at the game's most important position, setting the blueprint for near busts to one day reach $100 million. He signed a one-year modest deal in Tampa in 2023. Able to get the resurgence. Only Allen and Jackson have more touchdowns over the past two seasons than Mayfield's 73. Quote, fearless as a thrower and a runner, an NFL personnel evaluator said. Quote, he's got on-field leadership where teammates want to support him. Much better arm than giving credit for. Good mover in the pocket and can rush for yards. Attacks the third level of the defense when he's got time in the pocket, in parentheses. He's as good as almost anybody right now. He honestly reminds me of Favre a little bit as far as style of play, a personnel man said. He's got a moxie to him, like, bleep you, I'm on the attack. And defensive guys feel that pressure. He is ahead of C.J. Stroud and Jordan Love. Others receiving votes are Kyler Murray, Brock Purdy, Dak Prescott, Aaron Rodgers, Tua Tagovailoa, Bo Nix.
We still are only calling white guys saying white guys have moxie. We still only do that with white guys.
Why is that?
I never hear it with anybody else.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Well, we got 3 minutes. Go ahead and make your phone calls.
Well, so, should we do top power rank African American quarterbacks with Moxie? I don't know if you want to just go down that road right now.
Why doesn't Lamar Jackson have Moxie?
Yeah, turn the music off for a second. What's not Moxie
Jalen
about
Hurts
Lamar
doesn't
Jackson?
Have Moxie?
Jalen Hurts has a lot of Moxie.
Yeah, but no one's ever said it, so say it.
Yeah, but he's not like the most gifted thrower in the world, so you better have something for you. That means Moxie, right?
So are you saying he has Moxie?
Yes.
Yes! All right. Jalen Hurts has Moxie.
Get back to the power ranking music.
Lamar Jackson has a lot of Moxie.
I don't know why we didn't do it.
Daniels doesn't have Moxie?
Lots of hella Moxie.
I don't know if you're true about that. I bet some people are saying that about Jaden.
Okay.
Jaden Daniels said he has Moxie.
Then you know what? Good.
Quote, single-handedly took one of the worst franchises to the NFC title game as a rookie with a bad defense, one legitimate wide receiver, a dinosaur at tight end, an average OL at best, an NFL coordinator who prepared for Daniels last season said.
That's Moxie.
He had me sitting there in the press box going, I can't effing believe what this kid is doing because he clearly hates the rest of the Washington Commanders.
So,
that's great.
Your top three African-American quarterbacks with Moxie are?
Jaden Daniels,
number one.
No. Oh, right. Okay. No, sorry.
We got the music.
Jaden, Jalen.
Boom. Boom.
Jaden Daniels, Jalen Hurts. Boom, boom, boom. Right down the list. There you go.
As far as Baker, number 10.
Yeah, Baker, number 10. Get back to it.
I mean, he absolutely last year had a top 10 season. I mean, this is amazing that he's come back from the abyss because it was ugly. The injury year in Cleveland, I mean, we don't need to go over the history, but he was borderline going to be out of the league.
Yeah.
I thought.
Yeah.
And to see, and Fowler was getting the anonymous quotes, and that's how you get these guys to talk. And the anonymous quotes
hurry
were.
Hurry up. I got to get to the phones here.
That he's able to unite a locker room. That was not what people were saying.
No.
By the way, in that locker room, he was perceived very differently five years ago.
If he does well and our Browns don't do well, I think a lot more people are going to be saying you just had the wrong people around him in the locker room. James in East Cleveland, you're next up on the fan. Hello, James.
What's up, fellas?
Hi.
Hey, listen, you're right about that. That's absolutely right about the white quarterbacks got Moxie. The black quarterbacks, they got swagger.
Top three. Okay, James, top three white quarterbacks that have swagger.
Yes.
Power rank them and go.
See, he flipped it on its head.
Shoot. Josh Allen. I don't know, Baker.
Joe Burrow.
Baker, man. You take your pick.
Burrow's
take
got
it easy, guys. Much love.
Thank you very much, James.
I'm seeing it.
Burrow. Man, Burrow, he's got like a different look every, like, other week. Like, he looks like Flock of Seagulls one week, then he looks like Iceberg Slim the next week.
People
like,
that are watching, we finally did. I couldn't believe the wife allowed this. We watched 10 minutes of Quarterback on Netflix, and she just unprovoked goes, I love this Burrow kid. I love him. He is awesome.
A lot of people like him.
But it's got people wondering, is he overrated?
That's awesome that Sarah's in 2019 right now.
Yep.
Wait till she finds out what happens next year.
Big thanks to everybody who joined us today. Zach was great, and he should have thrown me under the bus. I'm sorry. I was reading about
the three participants in that conversation were great.
I was reading about my vasectomy, and I was totally distracted, and I asked Zach not once but twice the same question that Lyman just had. So I apologize. I was much better with Anthony Kastrovitz, who just joined us a half an hour ago. He was excellent. MLB.com, MLB Network.
You watching Home Run Derby tonight?
Yeah, watch a little bit of it.
Let's go.
It's under the clock now, so I know they fiddle with the rules a little bit, but I think it's a much better system than it used to be. All right, we're back tomorrow, 6 to 10. Can we tell everybody who's going to join us tomorrow?
Yeah.
If you don't, well, you're going to do it, so it doesn't matter. I mean, you will come back with Jimi Hendrix, won't you, at that juncture?
No. You. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Eric Bischoff joins us on the show tomorrow morning at 8. Eric Bischoff, everybody. Not going to ask about Ric Flair. Ken Carmen, Anthony Lima, for Big Country, for Jeff, for Mitch. I'm Ken Carmen. Yes, again, I'll say the name again. See, I'm repeating myself again. Bye. Have a great day. Have a great day. Go American League. Go, who's in the home run derby?
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah, wrapping it up. Bye.
It's because they're all going for full guarantees, Ken.
Hey, sounds good.
Where's your entourage now?
Cool, I got on the last show.
Loser town, loser fans, and you guys are a loser show.
It's because they're all going for full guarantees, Ken. That's because the first two to sign got them. So they want that.